This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Before a bundled-up crowd of about 800,000 on the National Mall, President Obama took the oath of office yesterday and gave a short but pointed inaugural address. Peppering his speech with references to the Constitution, Mr. Obama talked about the proud accomplishments Americans have made when united, from railroads and highways to Social Security. And so, in these fiercely partisan times, the president seemed to warn his Republican opponents that the nation's challenges today are too great to waste time fighting, saying we cannot afford delay.
We cannot mistake absolutism for principle, or substitute spectacle for politics, or treat name-calling as reasoned debate. We must act. We must act knowing that our work will be imperfect. We must act knowing that today's victories will be only partial, and that it will be up to those who stand here in 4 years, and 40 years, and 400 years hence to advance the timeless spirit once conferred to us in a spare Philadelphia hall.
And the president made reference to several priorities that will likely provoke partisan debate, among them same-sex marriage, immigration, climate change, and gun control. Today in The Exchange, what the speech conveyed and where its goals go from here. And let's get you into our conversation. If you listened to the speech or the coverage of it today, what did you think? Did it hit the right tone or not? What did you make of some of the topics mentioned? And what was missing from the speech, in your opinion? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests for the hour with us in studio, Chris Galdieri, assistant professor specializing in presidential politics at St. Anselm College. And Chris, welcome. Good to see you.
Thanks. Glad to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement there. And Wayne, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks, Laura. Good morning.
Well, and Wayne, to you first, your overall reaction of this speech.
I thought it was a good speech. I thought it was for a second inauguration. It was much more specific than I think a lot of folks expected. I mean, typically the purpose of an inauguration speech is to both, you know, sort of herald in the new era of a new term, a bit of a celebration, and also to articulate generally a vision, right? What is the president's vision for the next term? And this particular speech, as you've already noted, had quite a bit of specific points that he wanted to raise in a broader theme of equality. An interesting point was that in this particular speech, he referenced equality seven times, in the first speech once. So I thought that, you know, he did it. He certainly articulated what he wanted to work on. It was very strongly worded, I thought, in terms of articulating his vision. And what I think a lot of pundits, and I think this is a fair assessment, came away with, was that this was a very progressive agenda from what one reporter described as an unapologetic president.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit more about that equality theme. You're
sure.
Right, Wayne. We heard that a lot in a very short speech. But Chris, to you too, your overall thoughts.
I agree a lot with what a lot of Wayne said. What I found interesting about the policy specifics and the emphasis on things like equality was the way that the president led up to them. He didn't just say, this is the policy agenda I want to pursue in the next term. He very much rooted those in the language of the Declaration of Independence, in the promise of the Constitution. He kept going back to phrases like we the people. And so what he was doing was presenting what he wants to do, not just as a laundry list of policy preferences that he has, but saying that these are the things we have to do to fulfill the promise of those original documents and the promise of America's founding. And I thought that that was a really interesting use of the symbolic power of the presidency to sort of take the vast narrative of American history and craft a very particular take on that, that it's about, you know, achieving equality, achieving the blessings of liberty and all these things, but doing it in a way that's not just about what the president wants, but what the country was founded on.
Yeah, real interesting. A lot of interlacing, as you said, of the Constitution mm-hmm. in this. Since both of you touched on the equality theme, let's hear how the president talked about that.
For we, the people, understand that our country cannot succeed when a shrinking few do very well and a growing many barely make it. We believe that America's prosperity must rest upon the broad shoulders of a rising middle class. We know that America thrives when every person can find independence and pride in their work, when the wages of honest labor liberate families from the brink of hardship. We are true to our creed when a little girl born into the bleakest poverty knows that she has the same chance to succeed as anybody else because she is an American, she is free, and she is equal, not just in the eyes of God, but also in our own.
Again, that's President Obama giving his inaugural address yesterday on the National Mall before a huge crowd. And let's get your reaction to this hour. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And Chris Galdieri, Wayne Lesperance mentioned that a lot of commentators this morning are calling this a liberal speech or a progressive speech. And this is coming from commentators on both the right and the left. What do you think? Was this a liberal speech?
I think it was. But it wasn't about liberalism for its own sake. Again, it was liberalism as sort of an inevitable result of trying to fulfill the promise of the country. And I think that speaks to Obama's desire to be a transformative president. I mean, it's been pretty clear the entire time he's been a national figure that he just doesn't want to hold office for 8 years and then go back to Chicago. He wants to leave office having fundamentally changed the way Americans think about politics and talk about politics in much the same way that presidents like Ronald Reagan and Franklin Roosevelt did.
Yeah, and Wayne, pick up on that if you could in terms of how Mr. Obama presented himself, whether, you know, liberal, progressive, whatever you want to call it, in this speech versus 4 years ago. A little more caution, it seems, 4 years ago.
Certainly. And the big issue was, you know, the fear of and anxiety over the economy. And so the president's speech 4 years ago, I went back and reread it yesterday, really was about trying to find ways to work together, find ways to work in a post-partisan era with Republicans to address these huge issues that face the land. Yesterday's speech, you know, was very little of that. I think Chris is right in the way he characterizes it. It was a really elegant weaving of the Constitution and our sort of founding principles with, you know, this idea that we have new challenges that require new ways to address them. And that in the future, you know, think back to the time of Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was sort of famous for talking about the era of big government is over. That's not this president's approach. This president's saying government has a role to play. Government has an important role to play. And he outlined that in talking about things like Social Security, talking about gay rights or sustainability.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. I heard others say that while Ronald Reagan declared the era of big government is over, Barack Obama said, no, government is here and it has a major role to play.
That's exactly right. And that, I think, Chris is also right. This is about legacy. This is about how he will be remembered, you know, generations from now. And I think yesterday he tried to outline a vision that really talks about the important role government has to play.
Yeah, Chris, jump in there, please.
Sure. I think it was really interesting when he was talking about Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. He was essentially presenting these as settled questions, which is really surprising given the tone of the last presidential campaign, given the way those issues were up for debate with the previous Congress. He really seemed to be saying that the door is shut on trying to reform these programs in a really dramatic way. That's not to say that something might not happen as part of some sort of a deficit reduction bargain, but he clearly, I think, was serving notice that we're not going to raise the Medicare age to, you know, 68. We're not going to lower Social Security benefits dramatically.
That's a really important point because the backdrop of all of this is that at some point we have to talk once again about fiscal cliff, once again about getting a budget, and Republicans are adamant that there has to be some cuts to entitlements if there's going to be any kind of deal in increasing revenue, increasing taxes. The president yesterday made a very strong case for why he was not willing to cut entitlements, and that sort of sets the stage for yet another round of, you know, difficulties in terms of dealing with Congress.
Getting very specific there, as both of you said. Let's hear what President Obama said on that yesterday.
For we remember the lessons of our past, when twilight years were spent in poverty, and parents of a child with a disability had nowhere to turn. We do not believe that in this country freedom is reserved for the lucky or happiness for the few. We recognize that no matter how responsibly we live our lives, any one of us, at any time, may face a job loss or a sudden illness or a home swept away in a terrible storm. The commitments we make to each other through Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, these things do not sap our initiative, they strengthen us. They do not make us a nation of takers. They free us to take the risks that make this country great.
Again, President Obama, in his inauguration speech, as both of you said, making that case for some of these core social safety net programs. I couldn't help but notice, Chris Galdieri, they do not make us a nation of takers. That's a direct hit, if I could put it that way, to a comment that Mitt Romney made.
That's right. Yeah. And I think it's putting his interpretation on the election, that this was a debate over whether these programs make us takers or whether they strengthen us. And as far as the president's concerned, he won that argument. And so I think that, again, goes back to all of the upcoming debates that we're going to have over the budget, over spending on social programs. And I think that's the president staking out a position that he's not interested in really large cuts to these programs, but also he's making a positive defense of them, this argument that the reason we have these is so that when bad stuff happens, you know, you are protected. I think that's going to be the Democratic position going forward on these.
Yeah, and it's interesting because leading up to the speech, Wayne, a lot of people said inaugural speeches are not for specifics. As you said, it's time to lay out a broad vision. But here again, we have the president getting pretty specific.
Well, that's exactly right. And I like the notion of a positive affirmation of programs that are important to Democrats, important to progressives, and going after Republicans. I mean, the language in the opening that you had, we cannot mistake absolutism for principle or substitute spectacle for politics. I mean, he's really echoing what a lot of Americans feel in the sense that government is broken and that what passes for governance in Washington is really some sort of, you know, juvenile combativeness. And it was tapping into that. Now, can we accuse Democrats of doing that as well? Sure. I mean, both sides are obviously doing this. But it makes for a great speech where he has a captive audience. And, you know, we're going to be debating this going forward.
All right. We'll start taking your calls and emails after a short break. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on President Obama's inauguration speech on the exchange. Then at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, President Obama's second term agenda. Card-carrying members of NHPR can take advantage of special benefits all over the state. Restaurants, museums, theaters, lodgings. New businesses are signing up every week to offer discounts to NHPR member card holders. Visit NHPR.org for all available discounts and more information about the NHPR member card. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from TransCanada, generating and selling electricity and a proud supporter of New Hampshire's Audubon's initiative to restore nesting bald eagles in the Connecticut River watershed. And from New Hampshire School Administrators Association, honoring Dr. Christine Raff, superintendent of the Concord District, SAU 8. Information at nhsaa.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, President Obama's inauguration speech. We're playing back highlights from the speech, talking about what it might mean for his second term. And of course, we want your reaction. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. If you listened to the speech yesterday or today's coverage of it, what do you think? Do you think it hit the right tone or not? What do you make of some of the subjects that the president included? What was missing from the speech, in your opinion? Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on the exchange page at nhpr.org or on our Facebook page. And Chris Galdieri, Wayne Lesperance, let's go right back to our listeners. And Steve in Nottingham is with us. Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Go ahead.
What I found is that it was echoes of Martin Luther King's speech. One of the privileges I had in my life was I heard Robert Frost in person, and I heard in real time on the radio Martin Luther King's speech, and knew at that time it was a great speech. I felt Obama was echoing those same themes, but the other end of the Washington Mall. How brilliant to be looking at the Lincoln Memorial where the Martin Luther King's speech was given. Now we're at the Capitol giving the same message, and that same message was echoed in the songs, the Battle Hymn of the Republic and My Country, Tears of Thee, those were the same things that King emphasized. That's what I found.
Yeah, the symbolism of the day wasn't lost on anybody, Wayne.
No, and I think that's an important point. You know, this is an historic president on an inauguration day shares the same day as Martin Luther King Day. And certainly a lot of the themes are themes that Dr. King spoke about so many years ago. So, you know, I don't think that was lost on the president and his speechwriters. And certainly the pageantry of all of it, you know, throughout the day, if you watch the coverage, really was reaffirming of Dr. King's message and speeches.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, and it's a happy coincidence that we observe Dr. King's birthday right around the time that we inaugurate presidents. And I don't think that symbolism was lost on anyone who was watching. And I think that the speech did have a couple of direct echoes of that. And I think they were more more direct than we would have heard 4 years ago from this president, I think.
Thanks a lot for that call, Steve. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. Here's an email from Christopher in Manchester. One of the critiques of President Obama is that he's at his best when he's in campaign mode. Was this an inaugural speech in the traditional form, or more of a laying forth of the 2012's campaign objectives and the president's progressive agenda? What do you think, Chris? Thanks a lot, Christopher, for that email.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. I mean, presidents over the last couple of decades have increasingly been in what we sometimes describe as permanent campaign mode. And this president in particular, we know that his response when things are not going well is to give a speech. When health care looked like it was going off the rails, he gave a speech to Congress. In times of national tragedy, he's been he's spoken at events, at memorials. And I think it's fair to look at this as the opening salvo in his ongoing campaign on the issues that he was talking about yesterday.
Yeah, it was more specific and more campaigny
mm-hmm. yes.
than I thought, too. So, Christopher, I appreciate the point. Wayne?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the downside to that is, you know, historically, when compromises are made is when the glare of the campaign lights aren't on the candidates or on the folks elected. So to the extent that we want compromise, that we want Congress and the president to get together and to hammer out some deals, it's hard to do when the rhetoric outside the room is so strong and so well delivered.
Well, let's hear some of what you both referenced and our emailer, Christopher, references. The president did give a long list of priorities yesterday. Let's hear some of them.
For our journey is not complete until our wives, our mothers, and daughters can earn a living equal to their efforts. Our journey is not complete until our gay brothers and sisters are treated like anyone else under the law. For if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal as well. Our journey is not complete until no citizen is forced to wait for hours to exercise the right to vote. Our journey is not complete until we find a better way to welcome the striving, hopeful immigrants who still see America as a land of opportunity, until bright young students and engineers are enlisted in our workforce rather than expelled from our country. Our journey is not complete until all our children, from the streets of Detroit to the hills of Appalachia to the quiet lanes of Newtown, know that they are cared for and cherished and always safe from harm.
Again, President Obama talking about his agenda for his second term in his inaugural speech yesterday. We want your reaction this hour. What did you think of this speech? What did you like about it? What didn't you like? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Wayne Lesperance, Chris Galdieri, before we go back to our listeners, boy, that was a long piece of sound, but we felt, Wayne, it was important to play it because there's so much in there. Same-sex marriage, immigration, gun control, pay equity. This is a lot to tackle in 4 years.
Immigration reform, election reform. I mean, it's quite the laundry list.
Election reform. I didn't mention
that. That's right, in that one paragraph. And so, again, you know, the president is articulating his agenda, his way where he'd like to see things go in the future. And none of these are without controversy. I mean, these are not light, easy issues. Some of them are very big issues. I found striking just before that bit the language of Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall, women, African Americans, and homosexual rights. I mean, all together, co-equal in the language and apparently and obviously co-equal in the mind of the president, I mean, in terms of his agenda. So I thought it was very powerful. If these are issues that matter to you, you must have come away very encouraged yesterday that they were so prominently delivered by the president.
Yeah, and especially, particularly I was struck by the discussion of same-sex marriage because we know that the Supreme Court will be hearing several cases on things like the Defense of Marriage Act, on things like Prop 8 in California. And I don't think the president was unaware that he had the justices of the Supreme Court sitting to his left as he was speaking. I suspect that part of what he was doing was reminding them that public opinion has changed on this issue. And the court doesn't directly follow opinion, but they do not tend to not want to get too far out ahead of it. And I think part of that was reminding the justices of the court that you had a president who got reelected in part on the basis of his support for same-sex marriage. You had three states vote to institute it for the first time last year. You had another state vote down an amendment to ban it for one of the first times last year. And so I thought there was some a very particular audience for that part of it, above and beyond his supporters in that community.
Well, let's talk about the audience that those comments were aimed at. Wayne, one Republican said on Morning Edition this morning that this speech was delivered to those who elected President Obama, not the 48%, he said, who did not. What do you think?
I think that's missing some of the point, though. And I think this is an argument or a debate that's happening within the GOP itself. The leader of the legislature, the Republican leader of the legislature in Illinois recently said he's going to step away from blocking a gay marriage bill. And so it looks like Illinois will be next. There are six other states that are in line to come along. I mean, even the president has changed considerably his views. I mean, he's talked about having an evolving opinion from when he – in 2007, 2008, where he opposed gay marriage to his – giving an inaugural speech where he highlights it as something that is part of his agenda. The country is changing very quickly. I think Chris is exactly right. The president served to remind us all that there's a lot of change happening on this issue out there, and it's not lost on him that the Supreme Court will be taking these issues up. So I suspect we're going to be this is going to be one of those big ticket items for the president going forward.
So can we talk a little bit more about this same-sex marriage thing? Because it's a big deal, mm-hmm. and it's gotten a lot of attention this morning. What does he do, Chris Galdieri, with this relatively newfound support for same-sex marriage? Does he just speak encouragingly to the state efforts that Wayne mentions? Or does he try and go for this on a national scale?
Well, I don't think we'd see him go for it on a national scale because traditionally marriage is handled on a state basis. You know, different states have different rules about ages at which you can get married, how related you can be to someone to get married and that sort of thing. But we can see him, just publicly affirm his support. And we can also see some behind-the-scenes maneuvering. We know that he's been encouraging state legislators in Illinois, for instance. If a state like Minnesota is considering taking up the issue, we might see the same thing happening there. We might also see he's transformed his campaign organization into a nonprofit political action group. We could see them, reactivate those networks. So call people in states that are considering legislation or that are facing a referendum on the issue and get them involved in the fight in terms of contacting state legislators or mobilizing public support.
In some of what he's already done, not instructing the Attorney General not to go after DOMA cases, the
Defense of Marriage Act, which Bill Clinton passed.
That's right. I mean, mm-hmm. this shows you how quickly this has changed in a relatively short time. But also in terms of gays in the military being able to serve openly, and that's a huge change under this president. I think there is one obvious place, some sort of a revision of the tax code, which I'm not exactly sure how that would go. But this is certainly a place where he could lead at the federal level that would recognize tax-exempt status for couples, same-sex married couples, something that would be, sort of, again, normalizing gay marriage just like any other kind of marriage. The last point I think Chris was alluding to is don't underestimate the power of the bully pulpit. The president can be a very vocal cheerleader for efforts at reform on issues of gay marriage.
Okay, one more question on this, and then there's a couple more that I want to definitely tackle with you, gentlemen. Wayne, you spoke of how quickly this issue has changed, and in that implicit, how quickly this president has evolved. Chris, I wonder what you think. Did President Obama evolve on this, or did he play it politically smart, coming out for support when he had the political capital, being quiet when he had to for mm-hmm. political gain? I mean, now in his second term, he can maybe be a little bolder.
I think in the months leading up to him announcing his support for same-sex marriage, the whole thing had hit a point where basically everyone suspected that he was a supporter of same-sex marriage. The question was whether he was going to do it before the election or after. And I think what happened is that Vice President Biden essentially forced his hand on Meet the Press.
He had a comment there.
Yeah, he was asked. He gave his answer because, you know, God bless Joe Biden. and I think that forced the president's hand. But I think it was a hand that was ready to be forced. I think it was, you know, a very gentle twisting of the arm.
All right. Well, let's again invite our listeners to join us. 1-800-892-6477. Or you can post a comment on our Facebook page or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We want your thoughts, questions, reactions to President Obama's inaugural address yesterday, 1-800-892-6477. And up next from Concord is Tim. Hi, Tim. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine.
I'm just calling in to object to a word that I heard one of your commentators use, and it's done all the time. That is when the word entitlements is used as a euphemism for Social Security and Medicare. I object very strongly to the use of that term. It suggests that these are freebies. They are not freebies. We paid taxes for Social Security. I pay a premium for the Medicare I get. It's deducted, actually, from my Social Security payment. These are no more entitlements than the insurance you get when you file an insurance claim after you've been paying your premiums. Entitlements suggest these are freebies, and they are not. That's a game with the language that the Republicans, unfortunately, have played very successfully. Thank you.
Well, and Tim, thank you. And you're right. That is the term applied to them all the time by Republicans and Democrats. Chris Gallieri, what do you think?
Well, I noticed that the president didn't use the word entitlements at all when he was talking about it. So I suspect that the president agrees with Tim from Concord.
Yeah. Wayne?
Well, yes, although typically the shorthand word for these programs is entitlements. It's used by both Democrats and Republicans. But I think Tim makes a fair point. The one aside on that is that for most folks, by the time they go on to their great reward, they'll have taken more out of Social Security than they've paid into it. So to some extent, there is entitlement, I guess, there. But I think Tim's broader point is an important one.
Well, and Tim, thank you for calling. And it is interesting that the president did mention these, as you said earlier, as sort of a foreshadowing of the fiscal debates that await us once again. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. I want to mention another subject, gentlemen, that also got a lot of attention today, and one where some people, Wayne Lesperance, say Republicans and Democrats might actually be able to work together. That's immigration.
Well, and there's certainly at least discussion of a change in the Republican circles, whether it's Marco Rubio. Recently, Paul Ryan came out and endorsed Rubio's position. I mean, certainly the folks who we think are going to be visiting us very soon here in New Hampshire as part of the next primary process, perhaps too soon, are beginning to outline a different view. Bobby Jindal is another one. And so there may be movement on things that allow that provide a path towards amnesty, although Republicans will never use that word. But some progress, I think, on the Republican side. I would characterize it as progress on immigration issues.
There's a lot of talk about that after the election, Chris Gallieri, especially because of the growing power of the Latino vote.
The growing power of the Latino vote and their growing identification with the Democratic Party. I mean, if you look at the way that that particular demographic is growing and the extent to which they supported the president over Mitt Romney, you can't continue to be viable on the national level if you cannot win the votes of Hispanics. And that's the position the Republicans are looking at being in if they don't change.
Wayne, in a New Hampshire angle on this, we have a new group here in New Hampshire organized by a Republican, Fergus Cullen, former chair of the state party, and George Bruno, longtime Democratic activist. I think he was an ambassador during the Clinton administration. They've come together to create a new group.
That's right. And I think, you know, Fergus is, I think, part of a larger group of younger Republicans, who don't see the world in the same way that perhaps the more senior members of the party do. And I think they're much more open to a responsible type of reform when it comes to immigration. And I think that's the future of the Republican Party. Look, there's lots of scholarship out there in political science circles that says when a person votes, or the first votes are for the same party two or three times in a row, that identity gets locked in. It's very difficult to change that person's partisanship or political identity. Republicans are seeing two elections now where Hispanic voters have gone overwhelmingly for the Democrats, for the president. And so the question becomes is how do we break that path if we are Republicans in a way that allows us to be competitive with Hispanic voters?
Let's talk about another issue that President Obama did not talk a lot about in his first campaign, but is now talking a lot about, and I think you guys know what I'm going to say, climate change. Lots of crazy weather during President Obama's first 4 years. Let's hear what the president said yesterday about climate change.
We will respond to the threat of climate change, knowing that the failure to do so would betray our children and future generations. Some may still deny the overwhelming judgment of science, but none can avoid the devastating impact of raging fires and crippling drought and more powerful storms. The path towards sustainable energy sources will be long and sometimes difficult. But America cannot resist this transition. We must lead it.
Again, President Obama talking about climate change in his inaugural speech. Chris Galdieri, this is another tough nut to crack.
Yes, it's something of a surprise to see him talking about this. It's an issue that he campaigned on in 2008 and that then sort of fell by the wayside during his first term. Because
there was general language about planet in peril, but
right,
not much.
And he did propose a cap and trade plan that I believe passed the House but didn't make it out of the Senate. So I think a lot of folks assumed that that was an issue that was just off the table. The question is, what is he going to do about it in a second term and with a Republican House, at least for the next 2 years? So I think it's worth noting that his emphasis was on things like clean energy technology, not on a carbon tax or something like that.
Yeah, and it was interesting, Wayne, hearing Republican response this morning on Morning Edition to this climate change call. Meh. I mean, that was sort of the response there.
It's not on the radar. But, you know, Chris was right. In 2009, cap and trade came to a vote. It did not pass. And it seemed like the administration sort of moved away from that as one of its central issues. I think what's interesting about this particular piece and what's clever about it in the speech is that he didn't engage the science debate. And I think that the calculation is we're not going to win. People are stuck in their views. Let's forget that for a second. But there is a reality of what happened in New Jersey and New York from that super storm. There's a reality of more extreme storms. And this is what's attributed to climate change. And this is something that we ought to be concerned about because it affects real people in real time.
The droughts that affected the Midwest last
year,
and so forth. All right. More of your calls and emails after a very short break. 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
This is NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from Gripponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Gripponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at gripponi.com. And Waste Management, with a reminder, new energy-efficient CFL bulbs contain mercury and need to be recycled properly. Details and bulb recycling at thinkgreenfromhome.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Discovering new ideas often means asking the right question.
What was the question?
That's the best question you can pull out of that stack.
How can I help you?
Word of mouth. Unexpected radio for the inquiring mind. Monday through Thursday at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we look once again at the issue of privacy in the age of information saturation and digital technology. Join us with your thoughts by email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, before the program, and be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, reactions to President Obama's inauguration speech. Join our conversation if you listened to the speech or heard some of the coverage of it. What do you think? Did you think it hit the right mood, the right tone, or not? Also, some of the subjects that were mentioned, among them immigration, climate change, same-sex marriage. What did you make of the fact that the president included those topics? What was missing from the speech, in your opinion? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, let's go right back to our listeners. And Ted joins us from Hampstead. Ted, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sorry to rain on your inaugural parade here, but I think there were some big gaps in his messages. And I don't know how he could have ignored the economy and what's going on in this country, separate the stock market out of that, with jobs and the overall deficit. That is such a big concern. If you polled Americans, I think that those things would be first and foremost on their mind. And for him to not even make a mention about that, and another thing about foreign policy, there was zero in there for foreign policy. I think the problem with Barack Obama is he becomes an ideologue. And, you know, people are all enamored, especially the journalists in this country, folks like yourself, are all enamored with his wonderful, lofty journalistic and or idealistic professorial goals. But I don't really think it's realistic. What's going to, you know, make this country great is having good security and good jobs. If you look at Greece and you look at Tokyo, this morning in the paper, Tokyo and Japan, their GDP and their debt ratio is 220% of their GDP, and they've been struggling. Greece, people are, according to the NPR report that I heard this morning, people are burning their furniture and these forests in order to stay warm, because they have a problem.
Right, and Ted, I'm really glad.
You can't ignore these bigger problems, and that's what he's doing. He's creating his political will in order to get health care.
And Ted, I'm glad you called, because this is definitely something that many commentators were saying this morning. So I really appreciate the call, Ted. Chris Galdieri, many have said what Ted just said. Big gap in this speech for him and for some others was not very much on the economy and jobs and the deficit and debt issues that weigh on our economy.
Yeah, and looking at this, it looks like the main thing he said on that front was simply, you know, an economic recovery has begun, but didn't really gesture more in that direction. I have no idea what the president was thinking, but perhaps he was trying to set that aside as an issue that is not the main thing that we're fighting about. That's, you know, there's a recovery. It's not a great one. It's a fragile one, but it seems to be, you know, managing along, and to focus elsewhere and not have that be the one and only thing that this term is about. But yeah, that's a fair observation.
Is that a flaw in the speech, given what this country has been through economically for the last 4 years? Is that a flaw? Should he have hit on that more?
I think you could look at it that way. But again, I think if you look at what this president wants to do, he doesn't just want to get the economy going again. You know, early in his term, you know, he said that simply averting another depression was not enough for him, that he wanted to have a bigger legacy than that, that he wanted to do bigger things than that. And I think he is a president who's being pulled in both directions on that front.
Wayne?
Well, I guess at the risk of disagreeing with my good friend Chris here, I think there is nothing more important for the president to do than to address the economic issues. And he made a passing reference about the deficit and how we can't pass that burden on to our children. And then in the next breath said, but we're not going to make cuts to entitlements. And I'm sorry for using that word. And so there was a bit of an inconsistent message there. You're right. Foreign policy was barely mentioned. It was really a discussion about being a nation at war no more, and trying different approaches, but really not a whole lot there. I guess I'd step back a second, though, and say, what is the purpose of an inaugural speech? And we talked about it at the beginning. I'm not sure that we want or we expected a whole lot of depth on these issues in that, you know, 15-minute speech he gave. What I would say is that if he doesn't address these things in a much more substantive way at the State of the Union address coming up in 2 weeks, then there's a real gap in the vision of the president for the next term. But I suspect that those are going to be front and center, because that is what matters to the American people. We saw that poll after poll after poll throughout the election cycle. Jobs and the economy are the number one issue. They still are the number one issues. And while all of this is pageantry and great and important stuff that we heard yesterday, I don't think it's lost on the American people that it really is about jobs and the economy. So the caller makes a very valid point.
Okay. Well, Ted, thanks for bringing your voice to our conversation this hour. We appreciate it. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page or call 1-800-892-6477. So, gentlemen, we've talked about some of the more controversial issues that the president put forward: same-sex marriage, immigration, pay equity. He also, in one of the clips that we played earlier, Wayne, without saying the words gun control, talked about gun control, saying we must ensure that our children,
you know, including Newtown, are safe. And there was a dramatic pause there, too.
Yeah.
What about that? Can the president tackle gun control, immigration, same-sex marriage, pay equity all at once? Or is he setting up the Democratic Party for another midterm shellacking, to use his own words?
Well, that's a big question. And you know, there is a lot on the that's being described as being part of the agenda. I think gun control is front and center. We've heard that from Vice President Biden on the issue. We've seen the executive orders and the legislative agenda with real specifics on the issue. I'm betting we're going to hear more about it at the State of the Union. You know, a lot of these things that were described in the speech as being very much part of a progressive agenda can be cause for concern if you are a moderate or conservative Democrat, particularly in a red state, that's going to be seeking reelection in 2 years. So, you know, those are the kinds of issues that do keep those folks up at night, and they're going to be pushing back a little bit. This is a speech. This is all about vision. Actually executing, actually getting through a lot of these things on this agenda are much harder, and I would argue probably very unlikely. Nevertheless, this is the president's agenda, and he's going to advocate for it, and that's what he ought to be doing.
Chris?
Well, and it's also worth knowing that when he was talking about these, he wasn't necessarily talking about congressional action on them. You know, we've seen him issue some executive actions on things like gun control, climate change. He could address that with things like mileage requirements for new automobiles. To the extent that there will be legislation on this, the fact that anything that gets to his desk has to go through both a Republican House and a Democratic Senate might give red state Democrats a little bit of cover in that you can say, well, clearly this isn't a crazy proposal because the Republicans in the House voted for it too, so it's bipartisan. But yeah, I think Democratic senators in places like Louisiana and Arkansas and North Carolina and Alaska are going to be really wary and require a lot of persuasion on things like gun control.
Well, and let's talk a little bit more about that. And we looked at this about a week or so ago, and we'll be looking at it again in a couple of weeks. But on this gun control issue, Chris Galdieri, you know, there's been so much talk. And as you said, the president has tried to do a few things by executive order. Is there any way that he can get anything through Congress, given the concerns of conservative Democrats, rural Democrats, and given the huge concerns of Republicans?
I think it would be a very heavy lift. I think it will be tough to get something that you can get through particularly this House of Representatives that's controlled by Republicans, many of whom are very conservative, as well as, you know, you still have a handful of conservative Democratic House members and some moderate to conservative Democrats in the Senate. So I think the focus is going to be on the proposals that have the most public support, things like universal background checks, where if you look at surveys on that, you get, you know, 70, 80, 90% support for them in some polls. But yeah, I think it will take a lot of work, and I think it's the downside of having an expansive, ambitious agenda is you're potentially setting yourself up for a lot of failures.
And it's been said a lot this morning, Wayne, that the president and his administration are acutely aware of how the clock runs differently when you're in your second term. Seems to run a little more quickly, doesn't it?
It does. And 2 years from now, if not sooner, we'll be talking about a lame duck president, about a president who's working on his legacy and talking about new candidates, new future for the White House. Look, one of the interesting wrinkles in all of this, or two of them, there's very little groundwork laid, very little basis for coming together between Speaker Boehner and the president. Speaker Boehner said, "That's it, I'm done working with him. We don't get anywhere on these things." But where there has been some progress is with Joe Biden, particularly with people like Mitch McConnell. So I think one of the interesting things to watch for is Biden's role in carrying the president's legislation forward, and which will also very nicely set up Joe Biden for his next big gambit, which seems to be running for president. You might note, Laura, that Maggie Hassan, for example, was down for inauguration, and they attended the vice president attended a Iowa ball, the farm ball, I think it was called. So the vice president is already talking to the folks that you would talk to if you were planning on making a run for president. We're going to be talking about that quite a bit, I'm sure, here going forward.
Right. And it will be another year that we saw. I think it was 4 years ago where we had open primaries.
That's
on both
right.
sides. But let's not get there yet, Wayne,
sure.
Because I'm still getting over the last.
Sure, I'm with you.
Still working off from the last election. One more issue that the president mentioned rather forcefully that, Wayne, I have not heard come up a lot in our national debates, and that's pay equity for women.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of discussion, you know, briefly about the Lilly Ledbetter Act, and it was part of a debate, a prominent part of a debate. You remember when Mitt Romney was asked about it, didn't really know what it was. And so for a while during the campaign, that sort of flared up as an issue, but not a whole lot of discussion about it since then. I think it fits as a part of a broader theme of equality, which seemed to be the theme of the speech, and certainly a noble goal for the president to pursue. Beyond that, I'm not sure that it's a huge issue in the legislature, or in Congress. Sorry.
Did you hear? Were you surprised also by that, Chris? That came up so strongly.
A bit, and again, especially for the president who signed the Lilly Ledbetter Act early in his first term, it's unclear what the next step would be. I mean, it might have been sort of like putting make to do list on your to do list, so you have something you can cross off immediately and feel productive.
Well, our caller earlier said, again, he was disappointed he didn't hear more about the economy and the deficit, and we talked about that. He also said, Chris Galdieri, that there was zero on foreign policy. Now, there was some, he's right, not a lot. What was the sort of vision articulated by the president yesterday on foreign policy?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot in there. There was some reference to winding down the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and some general language in the direction of democracy and the direction of human rights. But again, it was trying to avoid, I think, any specific commitments. I think that is another fair place to criticize this address for not, really offering a whole lot on that topic.
Yeah, and it was relatively short, too.
Yes.
So
yes.
18 minutes long total. So go ahead, Wayne. Yeah, foreign policy.
I think that's exactly right. And there are some big issues out there that we're going to be looking to the president to lead on, how we manage the wind down in Afghanistan, what about Syria, which sort of has dropped off the news, and other potential hotspots coming up? What about the potential impacts of something like sequestration on our defense readiness? I mean, there are some big challenges that are out there in the tall grass waiting for us to address, and the president didn't get to it yesterday. I think that was a mistake. I'm hoping that'll be more prominent in the State of the Union.
We've talked about this a little bit, guys, but I'd love to get a little bit more from you before we close out. Wayne, what's been the range of Republican response to this speech that you have seen so far yesterday and this morning?
I thought that, for the most part, Republicans were remarkably self-restrained, and that's not normal for them. They usually come out swinging at these kinds of things. But your characterization of it, what's kind of the typical response? There was a little bit, of sort of on specifics on things like climate change and other issues. And there was quite a bit of discussion from folks like John McCain about, not talking about veterans, for example, a group that was missed out and a group that is a very big deal going forward because of the number of issues that are facing that as a group coming back from war. People's expectations on what an inauguration includes are pretty managed, I suppose. But the overall, the Republican response was fairly tame.
Yeah. Chris, what'd you hear?
Yeah. And I think what we're seeing reflects Republicans realizing that they're not in the position they were expecting to be in a year ago. A year ago, lots of Republicans assumed that Mitt Romney would be sworn in yesterday and that he'd take office with a Republican majority in the Senate and a bigger Republican majority in the House. And instead, the exact opposite of all those things happened. The Democrats didn't just win the presidential election. They picked up seats that they arguably had no business picking up in the Senate. And they cut the Republican majority in the House by a small number, but also by a symbolically significant way in that.
Well, New Hampshire's two seats flipped.
Right, New Hampshire's two seats and some really prominent sort of rhetorical bomb-throwing people like Alan West and Joe Walsh, the congressman from Florida and Illinois, lost their reelection bids for second terms. So I think the lay of the land in Washington has changed, and I think Republicans are still figuring out what that means for them.
Well, and Wayne, since you mentioned it a couple times, I'll throw this to you. State of the Union speech, expectations, thoughts. And by the way, when is that State of the Union speech?
February the 12th, I believe.
So, okay, so coming up.
That's right. It's just in time for Valentine's Day, so get your sweetheart. And, this is a time for the president to offer more specifics about his agenda. I think that the issues that are forefront on people's minds, the economy, jobs, will be prominent there. I think there will be quite a focus on gun control. I expect that seated next to the First Lady will be some victims or families of victims from the shooting in Newtown. That should be prominent in that discussion. We'll see if these other issues that were part of the inaugural come in as well, although I don't think it will be quite the rhetorical flourish that we saw in the inaugural speech. I think it should have more specifics. And frankly, this is probably the last big opportunity for this president to articulate an agenda that he wants to aggressively pursue, because a year from now will be the beginning of his second year, the beginning of potentially the lame duck session, depending on how elections go in 2 years. And there'll be less focus on what the president wants and more focus on getting members of Congress reelected.
And that's that differently ticking clock that we talked about
exactly
earlier in your second term. Your expectations for the State of the Union, Chris?
I generally agree with Wayne. I think we'll see possibly more in the way of what he's going to try to get done legislatively versus through some sort of unilateral executive action. So I think we'll have a better sense of what the president's priorities are and what he's going to spend a lot of energy dealing with Congress on in that.
Yeah, and it'll be before a different Congress.
It will, yes.
A slightly less Tea Party-ish Congress?
Tea Party-ish Congress, one with 20 female senators for the first time. One that will, you know, possibly be a bit more receptive to what he's got to say, and one where more moderate or just more mainstream conservative Republicans might have a bit bigger say in how the House is run.
Well, and we will, of course, be following up with a program after that speech, kind of what we did today. We'll be pulling clips from the speech, getting some commentary from here in the studio, and, of course, reaction from our listeners. Gentlemen, both of you, I want to thank you very much for coming in today. Wayne Lesperance, it's good to see you as always. Thank you for being here.
You too, Laura. Thank you so much.
Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement there. And Chris Galdieri, thank you also for coming in. I appreciate it.
Always glad to be here.
Chris Galdieri, assistant professor specializing in presidential politics at St. Anselm College. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.